Hello and welcome to Speak the Words, a Cosmere podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Mango.
This is a podcast where we are slowly but surely working our way through the story of the Stormlight Archive, the Cosmere overall, but more specifically, this book is Oathbringer, the third book in the Stormlight Archive. Last time, we went through quite a bit. Less exciting stuff. We had a Scar chapter last time where both Lin and Scar now can use Stormlight.
They can use Stormlight, which is cool.
I think this was the last time. Nope, just kidding. That was 2 episodes ago. last time started with Dalinar going to the war camps and checking out where Taln had been held.
And he was missing. Oh, and he found out that someone attacked it, which means that they went missing after that one scene that we saw where someone attacked and Taln just kind of went berserk.
Shallan got Elakar to take her with her, or take her with him on the, Kolinar mission.
Well, she got him to write a request for her to go on the mission.
Yeah.
Yasna's like, I'm gonna talk to him so you don't have to go. And it's like, she wants to go. No, don't do that.
And Renarin opened the library. He discovered the secret of the library.
Oh yeah, that was really cool. So... yeah. There are, like, all these different spheres that are cut a certain way, so they release Stormlight really, really fast. But, yeah. And so at first, they were like, why would they do that? That's so inefficient and a waste of Stormlight. Renarin realized it was a pattern. Was it Renarin? Who was it?
It was Shallan that realized it was a pattern.
It was Pattern that realized it was a pattern.
Yeah. And then told Shallan about it.
Yeah. And so she told everyone else, hey, this is a pattern. And they're like, oh, so, like, they did it so it releases Stormlight on purpose. And they found it because Renarin opened up this, like, box in the wall. And then once they figured that out, he opened all the boxes in the wall.
Yeah. They said, like, hundreds of boxes. We had a Dalinar flashback where Evie and the kids joined him on the battlefield.
And he was mad and he had no emotion towards Renarin. Also, he hated his name.
Yeah.
He was like, what is this? Botching together of languages.
Moash was Moash spoke with Leshwi, who is one of the fused, and she told him some secret about why the Voidbringers fight that we were not privy to. But because of it, Moash decided to stay, and he's training the Parshmen that Kaladin hung out with at the beginning of the book how to fight so that they're more likely to survive the upcoming battle for Kolinar.
Do they ever tell him that they met Kaladin?
I can't remember. And then we also had a Relaine chapter, just where Relaine was being kind of like,
you guys don't understand.
Yeah.
You try to understand, but you don't understand, and you say things.
And like, I love you for trying, but...
I love you for trying, but it's not working.
Yeah, low-key, Bridgefor is kind of racist.
I wish that Renarin was here, because he actually kind of cares.
Yeah. But at the end of the chapter, Kaladin is like, okay, tell me how you feel. Yeah.
Help me respect you, because we've been trained all our lives to look down on you and hate you. So.
Mm-hmm. And that was enough, right, Mango? That was enough, right? Mm. Did anything else happen?
So, the big thing is that Dalinar met with Gox again. That's all that happened.
Nothing else happened there.
He was expecting the vision to end, and then it just kind of didn't. And then there was this dude that showed up that looked all holy and stuff. He looked amazing, and Dalinar fell to his knees, and was like, who are you? Are you the Almighty? And he was like, nah, I'm the other guy. I'm Odium.
Oh, dun, shit.
Dun, dun.
And, dun, dun,
dun. Basically, they talked, and Odium was like, hey, you're gonna release me. And Dalinar's like, hey, I think the fuck not. And then he's like, how about we do that contest of champions thing that Dalinar was told to do? Nodium's like, nah, you're gonna release me either way. So I'm not even gonna bother. And then Dalinar's still like, I think the fuck not. And I'll fight you on it. And then Odium just kind of showed him like 0.1% of his real form. And scared the fuck out of him. So Yeah, Dalinar is gonna have, like, nightmares about that situation and kind of like, yeah, maybe he's more powerful than we thought. Oh, also he said that Odium wasn't necessarily just, like, all this evil shit. It's also, like, passion. People do evil stuff for passion, and people do good stuff for passion.
Yeah. And then Lyft showed up.
Oh, yeah. She did after that, but I was going to say something else.
Yeah.
Which is that Odium claims that the recreants happened because of passion, somehow. Yeah, and then Lyft showed up after Odium left.
There was something else that Odium said that I think got lost in the shuffle of everything, because it was a very hype moment, where he said that, I can't remember what he tells Dalinar, but he says that, he tells him to Dalinar, and then he says, you can say that to Cultivation next time that you see her. And Dalinar is like, what are you talking about? And he's like, I've never met Cultivation. And Odium is like, yeah, you have. She just took that memory from you. Not how I would have done things, but oh well. So apparently Dalinar has met Cultivation.
So he didn't go just see the Night Watcher. He went and saw Cultivation.
Apparently. At least that is what Odium claims.
Which is interesting.
This week, the interludes for today are from Kaza, Taravangian, and Venli. Interlude 4 is titled Kaza. It has the generic symbol. A woman named Kaza is aboard a ship named the First Dream, or it's just named First Dreams, and it's sailing directly into a storm. The storm suddenly stops as they approach the island of Amia. The crew of the ship is excited to find treasure, but Kaza is searching for a cure for her condition. She was a soul caster, and she was disfigured. Kaza was slowly becoming smoke. Her hair, her ears, and now parts of her face were disintegrating. The process was slow. She had a few years left until the soul casting killed her. They approached Akana, the capital of Amia. The captain asks her if she can soul cast away one of the stone spearheads that form a ring around the island. She says that she can make a hole in them, which is supposed to be harder, but she's no ordinary soul caster. She has begun to see the dark sky and the second sun, the creatures that lurk hidden around the cities of men. They load up into a dinghy, and Kaza carefully uses her soul caster, turning the rock to smoke. She nearly gave in herself. How wonderful would it be to no longer fear, to soar into infinity on the air, to be free of mortal pains. The captain switched to her rowboat as his own started to sail back to the First Dreams. As the men aboard had complained of feeling sick, they continued onward, and Kaza grew more excited at the prospect of learning how to avoid death by the device she loved. In the old days, you would have gone to Akana to get a soul caster. Suddenly, she began to feel sick, and all around her, the sailors began to fall unconscious. She rowed the dinghy to shore and found that none of the men in her boat were still breathing. She collapsed, feeling so tired. She awoke to a small kremlin scuttling across the rocks near her. It had a strange shape, with large wings and a head that made it look like an axe hound. Its carapace shimmered with dozens of colors. She stirred and the kremlin scrambled away. She coughed, then began to crawl toward rock formations. They looked like large, ornate buildings crusted with krem. Ah, a voice said from behind her. I should have guessed the drug would not affect you as quickly. You are barely human anymore. Kaza rolled over and found someone approaching. The cook? Yes, that was her, with the tattooed face. You, Kaza croaked. You poisoned us. After many warnings not to come to this place, it is rare I must guard it so aggressively. Men must not again discover this place. The gemstones? Kaza asked. Or is it something else? Something more? I cannot speak, the cook said, even to say to dying demand. There were those who could pull secrets from your soul, and the cost would be the ends of worlds. Sleep now, soul caster. This is the most merciful end I could give. The cook began to hum. Pieces of her broke off. She crumbled to a pile of chittering little kremlings that moved out of her clothing, leaving it in a heap. A hallucination? Kaza wondered as she drifted. She was dying. Well, that was nothing new. The kremlings began to pick at her hand, taking off her soul caster. No, she had one last thing to do. With a defiant shout, she pressed her hand to the rocky ground beneath her and demanded it change. When it became smoke, she went with it. Her choice, her destiny. And that is the end of the chapter. So the Sleepless are defending Amia for some reason. Something is there that they don't want humanity to get to. They say it would be the end of worlds if they did. And also, this is our first hint that if you use Soulcasters too much, shit can go wrong. She Soulcast herself along with the rock. It's something in the Cosmere that happens when you use a magic system for so long, it starts to have other consequences.
That makes sense.
It's called savantism in the Cosmere. Becoming a savant in a magic system has other effects. Interlude 5, Taravangian. It has the general symbol again. Taravangian is in his room in Yirithiru taking his daily intelligence test. He's a genius today and flies through the questions posed to him. He's also a raging asshole. Adratagia enters with Milada. Adratagia had been tasked with forming an emotional bond with the Dustbringer to keep her close to the diagram. They say that Taravangian is close to the danger line, but he insists that he's fine. He asks them to bring the diagram and some music and then leave him alone. As he leaves, he hits Moral, his bodyguard, with an extremely clever insult. Taravangian entered into his room and ordered his maid to measure the available gardening area of the stone field outside their balcony as Adratagia brings him the diagram. He pulls out a belt knife and begins to cut up the diagram, believing that since the diagram had originally been written in random pieces all over the room, he needed to break the book apart to truly understand it. He was not as brilliant as he'd been on that day, but he didn't need to be. That day, he'd been God. Today, he could be God's prophet. He cut up sentences, combining them in new ways and finding new connections and ideas. He didn't believe in any religion, but there was something holy about the diagram. He wonders if he could prevent anyone but the most intelligent of people from learning to read. Someone slid a piece of paper under his door with the dimensions of the farming platform. He stands there for a second, listening to Adratagia and Moral through the door and the overwhelming sound of singing children. His two, Adratagia and Moral are breaking down Taravangian's insult from earlier, and so he interrupts them before they can think too hard about it, and sends Adratagia to get gum paste so that he can stick the paper to the walls. She brings it to him and he begins to arrange the pages. He looks over the words, noting the part about Dalinar needing to be killed, and another space where it had said that Dalinar would try to unite the world. For some reason, the diagram had not seen the effect Renarin would have. He asks for the words of the surgeon upon his birth and for the singing children to be killed. He returns to his work, and Adratagia enters a little later and asks if he's at the same level of intelligence as when he created the diagram. "No," he said, "I haven't become him again, but I am me for the first time in weeks. This isn't you. This is the monster you sometimes become. I'm not smart enough to be in the dangerous zone." She unfolded a piece of paper from the pocket of her skirt. "Yes, your daily test. You stopped on this page, claiming you couldn't answer the next question." Damnation. She'd seen it. "If you'd answered, it would have proved you were intelligent enough to be dangerous. Instead, you decided you couldn't manage, a loophole we should have considered. You knew that if you finished the question, we'd restrict your decision-making for the day." Taravangian tries to distract her by saying that according to his calculations, the farming at Yirithiru must have been enhanced by Stormlight, as natural methods would not have been enough to feed the entire tower. "That's a distraction, Vargo. We were discussing what you've done to circumvent the rules you yourself set out. When I was stupid. When you were normal. Normal is stupid, Adro." He took her by the shoulders and firmly pushed her from the room. "I won't make policy decisions and I'll avoid ordering the murder of any further groups of melodic children. Fine? All right? Now leave me alone. You're sticking up the place with an air of contented idiocy." He shut the door and deep down felt a glimmer of shame. Had he called Adratagia of all people an idiot? Well, nothing to do about it now. She would understand. He turned back to the diagram and considered what to do about Dalinar, and looks over the words that had been he looks over at the surgeon's words from the day he had been born. "He had the cord wrapped around his neck," the surgeon had said. "The queen will know the best course, but I regret to inform her that while he lives, your son may have diminished capacity. Perhaps this is one to keep on outer estates, in favor of other heirs." The diminished capacity hadn't appeared, but the reputation had chased Taravangian from childhood. He'd overcome that reputation in magnificent ways. Now he'd save the world. Well, the part of the world that mattered. His maid interrupted him after working for hours. He asks Moral if he would execute the maid, and Moral says that Taravangian isn't allowed to make those decisions today. Taravangian says that they can't assassinate Dalinar anymore. They have to support his coalition and then force him to step down so that Taravangian can take his place. He tells Ajitaji to send Mulata Spren to spy on Dalinar and find secrets they can use to break him and take his place. Then they can negotiate with Odium. "Can't we beat Odium instead?" Morall asked. Taravangian rolled his eyes, but Ajitaji turned and explained. "The diagram is clear, Morall. This is the purpose of its creation. We cannot beat the enemy, so instead we save whatever we can." "The only way," Taravangian agreed. "Dalinar would never accept this fact. Only one man would be strong enough to make that sacrifice." Taravangian felt a glimmer of something. Memory. "Give me the capacity to save us." "Take this," he said to Ajitaji. "This will work." She nodded, towing Morall from the room as Taravangian knelt before the broken, ripped-up, sliced-up remnants of the diagram. Light and truth, save what he could. Abandon the rest. Thankfully, he had been given that capacity. And that is the end of the epigraph. Interlude, not the epigraph. So yeah, Taravangian is a raging psychopath when he's very smart. And just wants to have pretty much anybody murdered.
Anyone who interrupts his genius.
Also, we get a little more clear of a look at his motives, which isn't to save Roshar, but to save as much of it as possible and sacrifice the rest. So once Dalinar is out of the way, they'll negotiate with Odium to save however much they can. Interlude 6 is titled, "This One Is Mine," and it has Venli's symbol. Venli and a small group of listeners are waiting for the Everstorm. "See, Eshonai," Venli thought, "see what we can do if you don't hold us back." "All right, yes, that's it," Ulim said. "Good, good, all on the line, keep facing west." "Should we seek for cover before the storm, Envoy?" Milu asked, "or carry shields?" "Don't be silly. This is our storm. You have nothing to fear." "And it will bring us power," Venli asked. "Power beyond even that of Stormform?" "Great power," Ulim said. "You've been chosen. You're special. But you must embrace this. Welcome it. You have to want it, or the powers will not be able to take a place in your gem hearts." Venli had suffered so much, but this was her reward. She was done with a life spent wasting away under human oppression. She would never again be trapped, impotent. With this new power, she would always, always be able to fight back. The Everstorm rolls over them. A pressure enveloped her, pushing at her mind, her soul. "Let me in." With difficulty, she opened herself up to this force. This was just like adopting a new form, right? Pain seared her insides. She screamed. And then, a voice. "What is this?" An ancient, paternal voice, kindly and enveloping. "Please," Venli said. "Please." "Yes," the voice said. "Choose another. This one is mine." The force that had been pushing against her retreated, and the pain stopped. Something else, something smaller, less domineering, took its place. She accepted this Spren gladly, then whimpered in relief. The storm passed, and she found that she no longer wore a storm form. She wore a form that she had never seen before. Demid stood nearby, far taller than her, his body pulsing with a dark violet power. "Demid?" she asked. He turned toward Melu, who strode up in a similar form, and said something in a language Venli didn't recognize. "Demid," Venli asked again. "How do you feel? What happened?" He spoke again in that strange language, and his next words seemed to blur in her mind, somehow shifting until she understood them. "Odium rides the very winds, like the enemy once did. Incredible. Aharat, is that you?" "Yes," Milu said. This feels good." "Feel," Demid said. "It feels." He took a long, deep breath. "It feels." Had they gone mad? Another listener crawled over to them. His arm had been broken in the storm. He approached a gemstone and sucked in the dark violet light, his body healing. Another approached with teeth barred, whispering, "High sky, dead winds, blood rain." "Demid," Venli said. "Something has gone wrong. Sit down, wait. I will find the Spren." Demid looked at her. "You knew this corpse?" "This corpse? Demid, why?" "Oh no, oh no, oh no!" Ulim coursed across the ground to her. You aren't... Oh, this is bad, bad!" "Ulim," Venli demanded, "something is wrong with my companions. What have you brought upon us?" "Don't talk to them, Venli. Don't point at them." Nearby, Demid was pooling dark violet power in his hand somehow, studying her and Ulim. "It is you," he said to Ulim, "the envoy. You have my respect for your work, Spren." Ulim bowed to Demid. "Please, Grand of the Fused, see passion and forgive this child." "You should explain to her," Demid said, "so she does not aggravate me." Venli frowned. "What is... Come with me, Ulim said. You're lucky. He could have destroyed you. Damid would never do that. Unfortunately for you, your once mate is gone. That's Hariel, and he has one of the worst temperaments of all the fused. Hariel, what do you mean by... She trailed off. Demid didn't stand like her once mate, or speak like him. No, you said we were opening ourselves up to a new spren, a new form. I said that you were opening yourselves up. I didn't say what would enter. Look, your gods need bodies. It's like this every return. You should be flattered. Flattered to be killed? Yeah, for the good of the race. Those are the fused, ancient souls reborn. What you have, apparently, is just another form of power. A bond with a lesser void spren, which puts you above common listeners who have normal forms, but a step below the fused. A big step. She nodded, then started to walk back toward the group. Wait, what are you doing? What is wrong with you? I'm going to send that soul out. Bring Demid back. He needs to know the consequences before he can choose such a drastic... Back? Back. He's dead, as you should be. Oh, this is bad. What did you do? Resist like that sister of yours? Out of my way. He'll kill you. I warned of his temper. Envoy, Demid said. It wasn't his voice. She attuned agony. It wasn't his voice. Let her pass, the thing with Demid's body said. I will speak with her. Ulim sighed. Bother. You speak like a human, Spren. Their service here was grand, or your service here was grand, but you use their ways, their language. I find that displeasing. Ulim rippled away across the stones. Venli stepped up to the group of the fused. I regret the death of your friend, good servant, Demid said. Though you are the children of traitors, your war here is to be commended. You faced our hereditary enemies and gave no quarter, even when doomed. Please, Venli said. He was precious to me. Can you return him? He has passed into the blindness beyond. Unlike the witless void spren you bonded, which resides in your gem heart, my soul cannot share its dwelling. Nothing, not regrowth or act of odium, can restore him now. He reached out and took Venli by the chin. You were to bear a soul I have fought beside for thousands of years. She was turned away, and you were reserved. Odium has a purpose for you. Revel in that, and mourn not for your friend's passing. Odium will bring vengeance at long last to those we fight. He let go of her, and she had to struggle to keep herself from collapsing. She put him out of her mind, like Eshernai before him. This was the path she had placed herself on from the moment she had first listened to Ulim years ago, deciding that she would risk the return of her people's gods. Demid had fallen, but she had been preserved, and Odium himself, god of gods, had a purpose for her. She sat down on the ground. As she waited, she noted something hovering near the ground a short distance away, a little spren like that looked like a ball of light. Yes, she'd seen one of those near Eshernai. What was it? It seemed agitated and scooted across the stone closer to her. She instantly knew something. If the creatures standing nearby saw this spren, they would destroy it. She slapped her hand down over the spren as the creature wearing Demid's body turned toward her. He didn't seem to notice what she'd done. "Ready yourself to be carried," he said. "We must travel to Alethela." And that is the end of the chapter. Demid's friend, Venli's friends are gone, replaced by the fused. But Odium preserved her for some reason.
Wonder why.
And there's another spren hanging around Venli. Part 3 is titled Defying Truth, Love Truth. And the viewpoints are Dalinar, Shallan, Kaladin, and Adolin. I'm going to send you some art that is very beautiful, but you're going to hate what her eyebrows look like. This is a page of contemporary Thalen female fashion. Gorgeous art. I know you hate that the Thalen's eyebrows go around the back of their ears.
I like the fashion.
Yeah. Chapter 58 is titled Burdens, and it has Dalinar's symbol. The epigraph reads, "As a stone ward, I spent my entire life looking to sacrifice myself. I secretly worry that is the cowardly way, the easy way out." From drawer 29-5, Topaz. So throughout this part, all the epigraphs, the gemstone that they are from indicates the radiant order of the person that left the message. This is clearly a stone ward, as they said. But if the epigraph doesn't make it clear, I will tell you what order it's from. Dalinar stands on the Oathgate platform at Urithiru that connects them to Thalen City. He's joined by Navani, Taravangian, and Adratagia. He was shaken by his encounter with Odium in the vision, and how the Stormfather had whimpered in fright. They had decided to suspend usage of the visions for now, not wanting to give Odium another chance to intervene. Rial is guarding Dalinar, the bridgeman from earlier who had given him an attitude. Navani wants him to find a different guard, but Dalinar likes Rial. The control building flashed, a ring of stormlight running around it. Then Kaladin and Shallan emerged from it. Shallan says that they can transfer just the Oathgate control building, and not the whole platform itself, to save Stormlight. Kaladin says that the Thalen Queen is ready to meet, and so the rest of Dalinar's entourage enter the control building. Shallan returns to the tower, and Dalinar pulls Kaladin aside. Kaladin says that the flight in front of the High Storm had gone well, and Dalinar orders him to make for Kolinar at the next storm then. He tells Kaladin that on the way, he should check on the lands that he owns, which surprises Kaladin. Dalinar reminds him that as a Shardbearer, he now owned lands, and that Elokar had found him a nice portion. 6 or 7 villages and 1 town are within Kaladin's lands, and Kaladin says that he doesn't want the burden, but Dalinar says that it's their duty now that they've said the oaths. He tells Kaladin to find some good men to run the towns for him, and Kaladin asks to go recover his family after the Kolinar mission. Dalinar says that he can go do whatever he wants after opening the Oathgate. Dalinar enters the control building, and Mallada activates the Oathgate, taking them to Thalen City. The sight of it made Dalinar's breath catch. Thalen City was a mountainside metropolis like Kharbranth. Though Dalinar had never been to the city before, he'd studied maps, and knew Thalen City had once included only a section near the center they called the Ancient Ward. The city had long since been built beyond that. A lower section, called the Low Ward, cluttered the stones around the base of the wall. Above and behind the Ancient Ward, the city had expanded up a series of step-like tiers. These loft wards ended in a majestic royal ward at the top of the city, holding palaces, mansions, and temples. The Oathgate platform was on this level, at the northern edge of the city. Dalinar is stunned by the destruction caused by the Everstorm. Buildings were caved in, and the docks themselves had been swept away. They walked to the ramp where Queen Fenn and her prince consort Kamakal waited. He gives his condolences for their loss, and Fenn says that they lived too long in luxury, and offers him a tour of the city. One more chapter, chapter 59, is titled Bondsmith, and it has Dalinar's symbol. So the epigraph reads, "If this is to be permanent, then I wish to leave record of my husband and children. Wismal, as good a man as any woman could dream of loving. Kamakara and Molinar, the true gemstones of my life. From drawer 1215, Ruby." And so Ruby is Dustbringers. Fenn shows them all the Temple of Shalash, and once they're finished, Navani tells Dalinar to stop scowling. He's frustrated by the fact that the city is rubble and they're looking at temples. She says that they could send a diplomat in his place, but he insists that this is his role now. They're carried to their next stop, the Temple of Bata, which Fenn seems to want to skip, and when Dalinar insists on going to see it, he finds it filled with hundreds of wounded people. As they went to leave, Taravangian begged them to allow his surgeons to travel from Vaidenar using the Oath Gates let them help the wounded. Fenn allows it, and Dalinar is happy that Taravangian has forged yet another bond within the Coalition.
It's all helpful. Don't do that.
Taravangian.
Don't do that.
Taravangian tells Dalinar that he can see his own home destroyed in this city, and wonders what he must do to preserve it. Dalinar vows to protect Kharbranth, and Taravangian says that he will wait at the temple for his surgeons. They return to the Palanquins, and Fenn tells Dalinar that the city will recover from its losses. Dalinar offers to have the Eleti armies help clear rubble and rebuild. Fenn doesn't give a response, but Dalinar notices a nearby soldier glaring at him, and realizes that it's Fenn's son. Fenn says they will go to the Temple of Telenalat, since the Temple of Ishi is full of wounded as well. And the Grand Bazaar had been swept away with the docks. Dalinar tells Navani that the other political factions in Thalen City won't allow Fenn to accept his offer of aid. He has an idea to convince them that involves punching someone. They're waiting for a spectacle, and he wants to give them a display. Those words caught in his mind, and he found himself reaching back through his memories towards something still fuzzy and undefined. Something to do with the rift. And with Sadeus? The memory darted away just beneath the surface of his awareness. His subconscious shied from it, and he flinched like he'd been slapped. In that direction was pain. Navani agrees, telling Dalinar to give more scowls or even a grin, as a grin from Dalinar was more disturbing. They arrived at the Temple of Telenalat, where the main entrance has collapsed. Beautiful reliefs covered the walls on the outside, depicting the herald Telenalat standing his ground alone against a tide of Voidbringers. Unfortunately, these had cracked in hundreds of places. A large black scorch at the top of the wall showed where the strange Everstorm lightning had blasted the wall. None of the other temples had fared this poorly. It was as if Odium had a grudge against this one in particular. Telenalot, Dalinar thought. He was the one they abandoned. The one I lost. Fen leaves to attend to business while Dalinar and Navani have a meal. Dalinar decided to pick a fight. Fen's son would do. The temples were nice, Navani said, but you didn't enjoy them, did you? You wished to see something more militaristic. An excellent opening. You were right. You there, Captain Lord. I'm not one for dallying. Show me the city's walls. That is something of real interest. Are you serious? Fen's son said. Always. What? Are your armies in such bad shape that you'd be embarrassed to let me see them? I'm not going to let an enemy general inspect our defenses. I'm not your enemy, son. I'm not your son, tyrant. You've been shadowing me this entire day, soldier, speaking words that I've chosen not to hear. You're close to a line that, if crossed, will earn a response. I regret only that I didn't speak loudly enough for you to hear the insults, despot. The two prepare to have a duel, with no shards and just long swords. Don't hurt him, Navani whispered. She hesitated. But don't lose either. I'm not going to hurt him. I can't promise the part about losing. She didn't see, but of course she couldn't. Or she didn't. He couldn't simply beat this man up. All that would do was prove to the rest of them that Dalinar was a bully. Dalinar enters the ring, bearing no weapon. He says that the young man will have 3 minutes against Dalinar unarmed, but if he doesn't land any blows, then Dalinar gets 3 minutes with the young man unarmed. The duel begins, and Dalinar dodges all of Fen's son's attacks. The young man grows more desperate as he realizes what is coming. As the countdown hit 10, Dalinar raised his hands to the side and stepped into the man's thrust, allowing the sword to ram straight through his chest.
What?
Blood filled one of his lungs, and Stormlight rushed to heal him. The young man looked aghast. The pain faded. Dalinar coughed, spat blood to the side, then took the young man's hand by the wrist, shoving the sword farther through his chest. The young man released the sword hilt and scrabbled backward. That was a good thrust, Dalinar said. I could see how worried you were at the end. Others might have let their form suffer. The queen's son dropped to his knees, staring up as Dalinar stepped closer and loomed over him. Blood seeped around the wound, staining his shirt, until the Stormlight finally had time to heal the external cuts. Dalinar drew in enough that he glowed even in the daylight. The courtyard had grown silent. Scribes held their mouths aghast. Soldiers put hands on swords. Navani shared a sly smile with him, arms folded. Dalinar took the sword by the hilt and slid it from his chest. Stormlight rushed to heal the wound. The young man offered Dalinar his turn, but Dalinar says that they can call it even if he gives Dalinar his clean shirt. I don't want your life, son. I don't want your city or your kingdom. If I'd wanted to conquer Thelenna, I wouldn't offer you a smiling face and promises of peace. You should know that much from my reputation. He had accomplished his goal. They were in awe of him, afraid. He had them in his hand. For some reason, those frightened faces hit him harder than the sword had. Angry, ashamed for a reason he still didn't understand, he turned and strode away up the steps of the temple above. Alone, he needed a moment alone. He climbed to the temple, then turned and sat down on the steps. What had he just accomplished? He said he didn't want to conquer this people, but what story did his actions tell? I'm stronger than you, they said. I don't need to fight you. I could crush you without exerting myself. Was that what it should feel like to have the Knights Radiant come to your city? Dalinar felt a twisting nausea deep in his gut. Below, people gathered around Fen's son. In the back of Dalinar's mind, he heard that same insistent voice. Unite them. I'm trying, Dalinar whispered. Why couldn't he ever convince anyone peacefully? Why couldn't he get people to listen without first pounding them bloody, or conversely, shocking them with his own wounds? He sighed, leaning back. Unite us, please. That was a different voice. 100 of them overlapping, making the same plea. He closed his eyes, trying to pick out the source of those voices. Stone? Yes, he had a sensation of chunks of stone in pain. He was hearing the spren of the temple itself. These temple walls had existed as a single unit for centuries. Now the pieces hurt. They still viewed themselves as a beautiful set of carvings, not a ruined facade with fallen chunks scattered about. They longed to again be a single entity, unmarred. The spren of the temple cried with many voices, like men weeping over their broken bodies on a battlefield. Does everything I imagine have to be about destruction? About dying, broken bodies, smoke in the air, and blood on the stones? The warmth inside him said that it did not. He stood and turned, full of stormlight, and seized the fallen stone that blocked the doorway. Straining, he shifted the block until he could slip in and press his shoulders against it. He took a deep breath, then heaved upward. Stone ground stone as he lifted the block toward the top of the doorway. He got it high enough, then positioned his hands immediately over his head. With a final push, he pressed with legs, back, and arms together, shoving the block upward with everything he had. Stormlight raged inside him, and his joints popped, then healed, as he inched the stone back into place above the doorway. He could feel the temple urging him onward. It wanted so badly to be whole again. Dalinar drew in more stormlight as much as he could hold, draining every stormlight he'd brought, every gemstone he'd brought. Sweat streaming across his face, he got the block close enough that it felt right again. Power flooded through his arms into it, then seeped across the stones. The carvings popped back together. The stone lintel in his hands lifted and settled into place. Light filled the cracks in the stones and knit them back together, and glory spren burst around Dalinar's head. Dalinar faced it, shirtless and coated in sweat, feeling 20 years younger. No, the man he'd been 20 years ago could never, ever have done this. Bondsmith. A hand touched his arm. Navani. Dalinar, what did you do?
I listened. Power was good for far, far more than breaking. We've been ignoring that. We've been ignoring answers right in front of our eyes.
He looked back over his shoulder at the crowd climbing the steps, gathering around.
You, Dalinar said to his scribe. You're the one who wrote to Yirithiru and sent for Taravangian surgeons?
Yes, Bright Lord, she said.
Write again. Send for my son Renarin.
Queen Fen found him later working with her son, who now wore Dalinar's bloodied shirt, to fix a large broken statue outside the Temple of Bata. I did not expect to find the Blackthorn shirtless, Queen Fen said, and playing sculptor?
I can only fix inanimate objects, or inanimate things. My son does the more important work.
People poured out of the temple above, no longer sick or hurt.
I should have seen it earlier. I should have sent for him the moment I saw those wounded. I'm a fool.
Dalinar shook his head. Renarin has the ability to heal. He is new to his powers, as am I, and can best heal those who are recently wounded. I wonder if it's similar to what I'm doing. Once the soul grows accustomed to the wound, it's much harder to fix. Dalinar turned to the queen.
I don't know how long Renarin will hold out, and I don't know how many of those wounds will be new enough for him to fix, but it is something we could do.
Men called below, heaving a stone arm out through the window of a mansion.
I see you've charmed Kadralk as well, Fen noted.
He's a good lad.
He was determined to find a way to duel you. I hear you gave him that. You're going to roll over this whole city, charming each person in turn, aren't you?
Hopefully not. That sounds like it would take a lot of time. I need your help, Fen.
I find it hard to believe you need anything, considering what you've done today.
Shardbearers can't hold ground.
She looked at him, frowning.
Sorry, that's a military maxim. Never mind. Fen, I have Radiance, yes, but they, no matter how powerful, won't win this war. More importantly, I can't see what I'm missing. That's why I need you. I think like an Alethi, as do most of my advisors. We consider the war, the conflict, but miss important facts. When I first learned of Renarin's powers, I thought only of restoring people on the battlefield to continue the fight. I need you. I need the Azish. I need a coalition of leaders who see what I don't, because we're facing an enemy that doesn't think like any we faced before.
He bowed his head to her.
Please, join me, Fen.
I've already opened that gate, and I'm talking to the councils about giving aid to your war effort. Isn't that what you wanted?
Not close, Fen. I want you to join me.
The difference is
the distinction between referring to it as your war and our war.
You're relentless. She took a deep breath. I suppose that is what we need right now.
All right, Blackthorn. You, me, Taravangian. The first real united Vorin coalition the world has seen since the Heriocracy. It's unfortunate that two of us lead kingdoms that are in ruin.
Three, Dalinar said. Kolinar is besieged by the enemy. I've sent help, but for now Alethkar is an occupied kingdom.
Wonderful. Well, I think I can persuade the factions in my city to let your troops come and help here. If everything goes well with that, I will write to the Prime of Aesir. Maybe that will help.
I'm certain it will. Now that you've joined, the Azish Oathgate is the most essential to our cause.
Well, they're going to be tricky, Fen said. The Azish aren't as desperate as I am, and frankly, they aren't Vorin. People here, myself included, respond to a good push from a determined monarch. Strength and passion, the Vorin way. But those tactics will just make the Azish dig in and rebuff you harder.
He rubbed his chin.
Do you have any suggestions?
I don't think you'll find it very appealing.
Try me.
I'm starting to appreciate that the way I usually do things has severe limitations. That is where we are done for tonight. Dalinar's powers are cool. I like that he can fix the stone like that. He can repair objects. He can smith them back together using his powers. Not the most eventful chapter overall, or part overall, but... Not compared to last time, but, you know, we gotta set up momentum again. Fen is going to join the Coalition. So it's no longer just Dalinar and Taravangian. Next time, our team arrives at Kolinar. But yes, thanks so much for listening, guys. At SpeakStormlight on Twitter if you guys want to follow us there. SpeakTheWordsASP@gmail.com if you want to send us an email. Follow me on Twitter at Sean_AFK. Our cover art was made by our good friend Alex at Alex_BigBoy. All the links to all these things are in the episode description. And as always, life before death, strength before weakness, journey before destination.